Chapter 17. 15th August. Saw one whole cloud this morning. Watched as it crept right next to the sun, despite me looking up in hope, and dissipated immediately. For as many lackeys as Meredith keeps at her beck and call, I am surely the most ill-suited to the position. Mostly because she despises the sight of me. Which most, I feel, would consider a sign of a poor working relationship. And yet here I am, searching out apostates and running messages back and forth like a pet urchin, because my freedom depends entirely upon her sufferance, and I am nothing if not craven when it comes to my freedom. Poor Fenris. Well, he knew my baggage when he signed on. Maker. Between the two of us, we're practically a full suite. I do appreciate his willingness to stand at my shoulder and glower, though. I told him this afternoon that regardless of his history with Anders, should I ever be taken up by the Templars, I expect him to put all differences aside to break me out of the gallows immediately. He laughed, but his eyes were hard when he said he would. Good. August 17th. So steamy after yesterday's storm, Isabella could hardly get all the innuendo out at once. Do you know, journal? When I was a child, I used to go out into the field and pretend to be Queen Rowan at the Battle of Riverdane, and Carver would be Merrick, and Bethany would be either Loghain or Queen Rowan's previously unknown twin sister, Queen Alabaster, who was the same as Queen Rowan, only more beautiful, more beloved, and who more often than not kicked both Merrick and Rowan to the streets after the battle and ruled for Eldon alone. I bring this up because this afternoon, which was remarkable in several distinct ways, I managed to not only insult, but also physically injure the Sovereign King of Ferelden, His Majesty Alistair Theron, in the presence of his uncle, the Ban of Rainsfer, Tegan Garen. To be honest, I thought the letter was a joke. Maker knows I get enough of them now. It's rarer than diamonds to receive a genuine request for aid lately, between all the blind offers for my hand and the blinder request for the sum total of my fortune to be delivered to the docks at midnight in an oiled basket draped with bunting. I thought Bowden had let it slip through accidentally. And then I walked through the keep's door and saw Meredith arguing with a man in full plate right there in the entry hall. And so preoccupied was I with rolling my eyes straight out of my head that I didn't realize I recognized his face from all the printed coins Lyrene still takes for trade. Funny. I always thought it would feel different, standing before someone who rules your country. The place you loved, I mean. The place that was home. He was taller than me, but not by much, with lines around his eyes, and a wider face than the coins suggest. He laughed more often than I should have thought. He knew my name, too, and all evening I've been imagining him and his queen sitting in a blue salon, opening letters with news of my various exploits, marveling at this wonderful refugee who survived the blight against all odds and yet managed to still steadfastly ruin Ferelden's reputation all the way across an entire sea. Anyway, Aveline was infinitely properer than I was, of course, which, oddly enough, I think embarrassed him more than my inability to muster even the minimally appropriate deference due to my sovereign lord. Then, just to make sure the Maker was mocking me directly, on the way out I was so busy looking behind me to see if Meredith was watching that I missed Alistair pausing on one of the keep steps ahead of me, plowed directly into his posterior, knocked both of us off our balance, and clapped our temples so hard together I saw stars. I will say that the last time I saw Aveline so disgusted with me, I was drunkenly weeping into her shoulder about the mayfly lifespan of my dog, comparatively speaking. But again, Alistair hardly minded at all. And once we got out of the keep, we managed the four of us to have a wholly reasonable conversation about imported dairy products and the effects of the latest storm on Ferelden's grain production, which I honestly cared a great deal more about than Meredith, anyway. He says the edges of the wilds are still enough a wasteland they've not counted on its stores at all. He didn't remember any recent news of Lothering itself, but he said a few places have begun to recover, and that Lothering might have been one of them. A bit of growing green against all odds. I'd like to see that chantry rebuilt someday, with the sun turning colors through its glass windows every morning. My favorite moment came a little later, though, as Tegan was talking about the troubles he's been having with one of Redcliffe's apple groves. had looked over his shoulder and saw Fenris on his way back from the Chantry. Visiting Sebastian, I think, since it's the third of the week. So I waved him over and introduced him. He can be so coolly civil when he wants to be, and despite the leer I have yet to successfully suppress as I introduced my friend, he gave that crisp to Vinter half bow to Alistair and nodded to Tegan and slipped right into the conversation about the apples. Easy as anything. Fucking proud of him. Not enough words for the joy. I'm bursting every time I think of it. Daenerys can twist his bloody mincy little words all he likes. No Tevinter slave ever stood so straight and free before a king. He belonged there. He belonged there with us. King Alistair honored him and deferred to him more than once as we spoke, and Ban Tegan admired his sword, and Aveline told the story of our trip to Sundermount and the Valtero we fought there, and how Fenris tore two of its legs from the thing before Varric and I finished it off. She knew, I think, how I felt. I kept stumbling over my sentences, preoccupied as I was, marveling at Fenris's wonderful face so near King Alistair's stubbly one. So to have her slip in as often as she did and cover for my idiocy was dreadfully kind. Alistair asked us, in the end, if we'd come back. Serve our country once more. Serve the throne. Aveline didn't know. And I said, yes was in my mouth. I could already feel it. Could already smell lothering spring fields and the green ivy that grows in the boulders next to the southern lakes and the thick, crisp cut to the air right before it storms and... And then I glanced over his shoulder at the way the afternoon sunlight poured down the silk draped through the Chantry Square, and I saw the peak of Fenris's roof over the wall where I first told him I loved him, and I thought of Pellery's and Jules' wedding next week, and the sticky buns Arana's promised to make for Rick and Grace after, and how Sebastian plans to come help her with the glazing, and I... Well, I couldn't. I looked at Fenris, and his eyes softened just a little, and I said I would be happy to come visit, and I offered my aid should it ever be needed, but that I thought perhaps my place was here, at least for now. Alistair's face changed enough that I think he understood my meaning, and he nodded and said to send word should we ever have need of him. He said he knew our road was difficult, but he thought Kirkwall was in the best hands she might be able to get, even if she didn't know it yet. Generous statement, I thought, considering how near I'd been to abandoning her only a scant moment prior, but I appreciated it all the same. Then Isabella sauntered by on her way to the Blooming Rose, and Alistair turned beet red, and all of us learned a great deal more about a brothel on Daenerim than I think any of us ever expected when we woke this morning. August 24th. Rained all morning. Heavier storms this afternoon. Dal would have called this a gully washer. I could die a happy dog lord if I never had to run another errand for that woman. If I didn't know how terrified I was of her assistant, and the implications of that assistant, and I didn't know she knew, and I didn't know she knew, well, I'd never help her again at all. So there. That said, my hands are still cold from the last time we went through. Even Aveline winced at Elsa's help, and I can't remember the last time she was flappable. Regardless, two blood mages are no more, and one mage is safely... The last word is scratched out. And one mage is returned to the circle, and the blood of at least two more innocent lives has poured through my fingers. Poor Evelina. Poor blessed Nyssa. I led her to her death for nothing more than the misfortune of loving the wrong man and trusting the wrong woman to protect her. Meryl said Nyssa always kept to herself in the alienage. She's going to take the cloth and ivory from the market stand to Nyssa's neighbor, an older woman to whom she used to carry stew on cold evenings. She's to see to the lease in the apartment as well, though she doesn't know if the landlord will speak to her. For once, it's because Meryl's a stranger and no relative, not because of the blood magic or the tendency to traipse in other people's gardens without permission. I even saw an alienage elf give her a nod of recognition on our way out after Nissa died, which is practically an embrace for her by now. She's still pale and too concerned with that contraption of a mirror, but perhaps this is a step in the right direction. Speaking of directions, there's word on the winds that Castilian's floating back into town to claim Isabella's debt. She's working on some foolish plan involving the Blooming Rose and a secret trail, and I adore every ridiculous part of it. That woman has more machinations than Varric's clockwork crossbow. Damn. I keep thinking about Nissa's face when I told her I'd help. 29th August. Stifling. Politically and weatherly, I should say, with the humidity like a wall pressing us down into the cobbles. Sold my soul to get Isabella her ship. Or, if not the whole, at least another little bit of it, as Fenris's disapproving looks keep telling me every time she starts waxing on about her lovely new beauty. I could have bought her a ship. I could even have paid to have Castillo killed. Maker's blood, I could have gone and done it myself the moment Isabella was away. But I didn't, and now he's free to continue slaving. For now, anyway. And she's free to take herself off into the horizon the moment the winds call her and tear me apart all over again. Do you know what the worst part is, Journal? I saw her eyes the moment she stepped on that ship for the first time, knowing it to be hers, every plank and nail and inch of rope, and I'd do it all again for her without a second's thought. 2nd Kingsway. One orange leaf on the trees in the square before the chantry today. Don't make me empty promises, Autumn. Jewel and Pellery's wedding today. Jewel wore a lovely brown and a green dress embroidered in gold thread, and Pellery wore the same green trimmed in white. I caught a glimpse of her face, right when they met each other at the back of the chantry to walk toward Mother Nada together, and just for a moment all I could think of was the first time I ever met Pellery, a tiny thing too young for her taffeta, sitting in my parlor, her terrible mother eating Orana's tea cakes and smiling at me like she owned me already. Her mother wasn't smiling today, but she was there, and Jewel's mother beamed bright enough for both of them anyway. I'd wager she even outshone the little flame they lit in the shared cup afterwards. Though now that I think about it, that might have been due to the diamond the size of my fist dangling from her necklace. Fenris went with me. I'll refrain from describing my cat-like satisfaction at holding his hand. In public, even, bride preserve me. Even if it was mostly just between us while we sat in the pews. I never really dreamed of marriage as a girl, preoccupied as I was with keeping the family safe and the mule happy and plowing. But I'd marry him if he wanted. Flames. I'd marry him just to spite Lord Stinton fucking Forrester, who was also there. Poor judgment, Lady Ashbridge. And whose face pinched so badly when he saw us, his mouth practically sucked out the back of his head. A less lofty reason, perhaps. But since Fenris refuses to permit me to shout my affection for him from the Hightown rooftops, I find I must be satisfied with taking his hand in public and watching people I dislike wither on the inside for it. It helps significantly that he looks like some stern foreign lord in that Tevinter dress tunic and the black trousers that fit him all the way down. Most handsome man in the room, and he didn't even know it. Which isn't to say he didn't look infinitely better out of them later, though. Ha! 9th Kingsway. There was one whole single breeze today. I swear it. Toby has, I think, become overly familiar with the neighbor's gray hunting bitch. I told him he was under no circumstances to make any rash decisions, and he licked my nose and ate a metal pie tin in answer, so I may or may not have broken through. We'll see if any puppies emerge with iron stomachs and a penchant for stealing fowl, I suppose. I can't deny they'd be heart-stoppingly adorable. It's been quiet all week. It makes me uneasy. 14th Kingsway. Marathari's dead, and Meryl's shattered the mirror. Fenris was cruel to her after. So was Anders. I lost my temper at both of them and upset Meryl even more in the doing. Flames and pyre! I wanted that thing gone. But not like this. 17th Kingsway. Cool. Went back to speak to the Dalish today. I went by myself, which probably wasn't wise, but Meryl's lost like a kit in the snow, and I didn't want anyone else's judgment or catty remarks or over-kindness to get in the way. Master Illyn says Marathari told no one what she was going to do. Her first isn't the right word, I know, because it was different Alvin, and Meryl said she hadn't been replaced yet anyway. Some student of hers, that she was close to, suspected she'd done something foolish. He said the girl followed us up the mountain and came down again when we went into the cave with the idol. He supposes he's the elder now, until the clan comes to a choice in who will lead them next. He said they won't kill Meryl if they see her, bitter thanks to me. But she's not welcome alone any longer. I asked if I could take Meryl something from the clan to remember Marathari by. I told him she loved her still and grieves her death. He said they'd left Marathari's body in the cave, where she'd sold herself to save something not worth the selling, and that I was welcome to anything left that hadn't been taken by birds of the earth. I was so angry. So angry. And I told him so. And I told him Meryl loved her clan more than her own life, and everything she did was for their sake. And if they were still too stubborn to see it after all this time, they might as well be heartless. He looked at me, and he said that it would be better to die than have his heart killed in the saving. I wanted to pretend I didn't know what he meant. I wanted to keep my righteous anger for Meryl's sake, and for all the lost sods in Kirkwall who've had their families turn away from them for... for Maker knows why, but... all I could see was my mother's face, and the peace in her eyes when she told me not to save her. I went up the mountain to the cave and took up Marathari's staff, and then I walked to Meryl's home in the alienage and knocked at her door. She wouldn't let me in, so I tucked the staff in against the door jamb and went to visit Gamlin. Sherrod was there too, so we played cards and drank until the sun went down and Gamlin started snoring, and then Sherrod took me home with her on account of me not being fit to walk Lowtown alone in my state. So says she. A bandit pissed himself the side of my face 2 weeks ago. I didn't even have to say anything. She's laid me out a pallet on her floor, and she's very studiously ignoring my burning down all of her candles. But I think I'm finished with this. As much as I'll ever be, anyway. Until Meryl lets me back in through the cracks. I remember just sending it to Arana this time. At least I managed that. 25th Kingsway. Warm again, but in a desperate sort of way, as if the season knows it's on its way out. Finally, Maker. Fenris apologized to Meryl today. He didn't know I heard him. We were getting ready to go after a band of blood mages that's been taking young women from Lowtown, and he was down the stairs at the Hanged Man as I was coming out of Varric's suite. He didn't quite apologize for the sentiment, but he did for the tone and the timing, and he said he knew he'd hurt her in the saying and regretted it. Meryl thanked him, because she's the most generous person I've ever met, and he hemmed and hummed and extricated himself from the conversation as quickly and gracelessly, and knew there had to be something he wasn't superb at, as he could. By the time I came down the stairs, he was standing across the bar at one of the city windows, but Meryl was still there, and she saw me, and she smiled as she lifted Marathari's staff. She didn't say anything, but her eyes were shining. 28th Kingsway. Rained all day in Kirkwall. The puddled streets just about empty of life. The followers of She have been ousted at last, and all the girls living that they still had captive have been returned to their homes. There is one girl, a little older than the rest, 16, 17, who's a mage and the oldest of 5. All girls, Maker preserve that family. She seemed familiar, somehow, but I couldn't place her. Her name was Gloria. It's also worth noting that every single woman in her family has the most blazing golden hair, and even the rain couldn't keep their spirits dampened as she bounded through the door to her home in Lowtown. I must have seen her around Gamlin's place, I suppose. Maker. It's such a precious thing when someone can be saved. There is a demon at the end of it, a corrupted desire named Hanker, and she spoke to me before she died. She said she could see the heart of me, and she could give me what I wanted, if I'd spare her, if I'd become a vessel for her power. I told her I was too prone to breaking crockery as it was, thank you very much, and she'd have to look elsewhere to meet her quota. Then Fenris stabbed her right through the heart from behind, and she turned into embers and purple ash that reeked of rotten eggs. Varric says he's going to turn it into a new chapter of Hard and Hightown. I told him if I featured in it at all, I'd hire someone else to write my authoritative biography, and he only laughed and shook his head. I don't trust him one inch. Second Harvest Mirror. Guess what lucky sod got to get a cape and scarf out of the coat closet this morning? There are things I've been discovering lately that I never knew I didn't know. For instance, I've learned that having Fenris's fingers resting on the side of my neck as we sleep is more important to me than breathing. I've learned there's a very specific way to bother his ears that'll have him bothering me in an equally excellent way in less than a handful of minutes. I've learned that the slightly puffy-eyed glare he gives with one eye when I wake him too early in the morning is more precious to me than a fistful of rubies, even the ones the size of quail eggs Lord Ashbridge wears every first day. I have more scars than he does. The Aroshock helped with that, certainly, and it does bother me a bit there's a stripe along my ribs where I can't feel his fingers, but the few he does have are marks of worse stories than mine, so I think we still come out more evens than odds. And yet, there's something I've noticed, mostly when he's tired, but sometimes when he's just had a difficult day, or a long one, and I don't know quite how to say it. It's almost as if he craves touch. To be touched, I mean. Or to just cuddle, if that weren't wholly the wrong word for it. To sit close and... Andraste, if even I don't know what I mean, how can I expect anyone else to understand? After dinner, in two glasses of whiskey, loose, articulate, devilishly attractive to all who see upon me. Look upon me. What I meant to say earlier is that last night, after we'd both had baths, tragically separate, but we were ruined with ichor, and I'd gone to the library, Fenris came in and sat down beside me closer than he ever does usually, and over the course of the next 20 minutes, or thereabouts, via the deep secret signs of sideways glances and a half-open gesture or two, and my asking, his head ended up directly in my lap. He trusts me! How terrifying! His eyes were closed, and his hair was damp from the bath, so it was more gray than white, and he was warm and heavy, and the lyrium sang as I brushed down his neck. He was wearing no armor, only a soft green shirt and linen trousers for sleeping, and his eyes were closed, and one hand was on his chest, and his fingers were curled into the fabric, just a little, and gently, and every now and then as he breathed, he'd thumb absently across the seam of his collar. My heart might have broken every rib in the beating. It hurts so badly. I have to sleep for tonight. I've been so caught in the memory, it's taken me half an hour to write even these few lines, and Fenris has turned away from the candles and gone to sleep. His back is pressed up against me, though, and I can feel him breathing, slow and deep as the way the tide pulls at the docks in the evening. Maker, this whiskey's stronger than I thought. Lest I berate myself later for maudlinism, I'll remind myself that today I kicked Toby in the ribs by accident, nearly smashed one of Fenris's fingers in a door, and discovered I no longer may eat fish after sundown. Indigestion. There. Humility.